Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast, and we have got all four of us on deck again. Your host, Colin Dams, here, and I'm joined by Matthew Barnes, Nathan Heinschel, and Polly Questel. We'll just go in that order, I guess, since I didn't give you each your own intro. Matt, how's it going?
Man, I'm buzzing, man. It feels so good right now. Like, I can't get enough of, like, just content in general, and since I don't have cable, I've just been watching, like, all the NBC stuff on, like, YouTube and everything. Like, it's the only way I've been able to, like, watch stuff, so I've just been, like, going through everything and watching it, and, man, it's just great, dude. I'm so happy. Like, a lot of people just needed to suck it up and believe in Ollie. Like, this is even more of a reason why, like Woodward, just they have to back him. And I think this year, I know a lot of times we're like kind of doubtful, but like I think this year is going to be the year that he does get backed, because we actually can. And before we go back into the Champions League, we usually have like an overhaul.
Yeah,
where we could get a lot of players. So I don't know if it'll be exactly that, but I think it might be three players, possibly four if we get like we get an Alexa swap.
Well, but, more on that later.
Yeah.
But yeah, Champions League football confirmed. Nathan, how you feeling?
That was the longest intro. that was like our outro, but an intro form.
Sorry, Dad.
I think the best way to describe how I'm feeling is God bless the Out of Context United podcast or Twitter page for reposting that shot on ESPN FC of Craig Burley actually contemplating Manchester United in the relegation scrap. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, when Matt said, people just needed to back Ollie, I thought of all the people on Twitter, the Ollie out crowd that started getting called out, the This You crowd.
And I'm yeah, sure, that's why Polly, I'm triggered, dude.
I'm sure Polly's triggered too. Polly's been Ollie Gunnar Solskjaer since day one. How does it feel being vindicated by this, Polly?
That's exactly what the word I would have used to say. Like, I would have said if we would have recorded this Sunday afternoon, I probably would have had a lot to say and a lot of takes on this. But like, I've just been sitting here now for the last 2 days, and that's really all I just feel is vindicated of, like, I've been saying this since day one. Maybe not so much day one, but like definitely day one of this season. And been saying there is a process here. He is building something. You can see it. And like, you know, a lot of people don't see anything, don't see progress unless the ball goes in the net. And it's like, that's not how football and tactics and everything that you complain that Solskjaer doesn't have, none of that actually works. Like, obviously people will only say that it works if the ball goes in the net, but like it most of the time, the ball doesn't go in the net. You know, if the ball goes in the net 2 out of 10 times, you're doing pretty well. And I've just been sitting here the entire season just saying there is progress happening and we just need to see it. And you know, in September and October when it seemed real dark and it's like, well, that's because, like, you got to stay with me here. But like Andreas Pereira, Jesse Lingard, Juan Mata, Ashley Young, they aren't good enough to carry a team here. Like, all of our best players are injured. And at the end of the year, you know, when we right before lockdown, it looked like we had turned a corner and then things broke down again. And I was saying, like, well, when this thing restarts, like, I certainly fancy us to catch Chelsea and maybe even Leicester. And we turned out to catch them both. And yeah, vindicated is the best word to describe how I feel.
You're
right.
You're fucking
now.
Right. We called them.
Yeah. The fact that we finished third too is pretty remarkable. So we were in what, 14th in October, November?
We were in 14th after 10 games. We actually, funny how this worked. We went into the October international break in 12th with 9 points, and it looked really dire, especially because we were coming out of that break with Liverpool. Got what at the time seemed like a great result in a 1-1 macro level seems like a pretty good result in a 1-1 draw against Liverpool. Bad result because we should have won 1-0. Right. Bad result because we should have won 1-0, and we actually So good result for us in that we got a point against Liverpool and then actually fell to 14th by doing that.
Yeah, and then, of course, you know, a lot of the Scott McTominay agenda coming out recently, or accusations of a Scott McTominay agenda. But really kind of an important piece in holding together that midfield in the October-November area, or holding it together in quotations, because that's where most of our draws came from, I believe. But, right. Of course...
I mean, McTominay, you know, and Fred were really instrumental in keeping us afloat this season. They played great, but it's not the worst thing in the world to say in hindsight, like, what we saw as great at the time is simply not good enough anymore. I mean, that's what we're going to be saying next year. Yes, we finished third right now. We won 66 points. And I think when you look at it, like, in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's first year, year one of the rebuild, 66 points is fine. And yes, we made the Champions League because we finished third because the rest of the league sucked. We made the Champions League because some years 66 points is good enough for that. Some years it's not. I would have said before the season, probably 64 to 70 points is where I see this team ending up. But next year, 66 points is not fine. You know, in that kind of prism, we could say that's not good enough anymore. So in the first half of the season, yes, McTominay and Fred kept us afloat, but it's not a problem. It's not a bad thing to say those performances aren't good enough at this standard anymore. You know, we won five games all season when they started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know Matt and I think Nathan were both definitely, at least last summer, looking at Bruno Fernandes, as was apparently Ed Woodward. And his arrival in January was very important, but I guess
I wanted him at last summer, dude.
Because, yeah, I'll get to that in a second, because I'm looking up the stats now. 18-19, we conceded 54 goals and finished with 66 points. 19-20, we conceded 36 goals and finished with 66 points. Vast improvement defensively. I think it's better than our 98-99 record.
It is. It is better than the treble winning season.
Would you guys go so far to say that either Wan-Bissaka or Harry Maguire or both of them were then more important signings than Bruno Fernandes?
Wan-Bissaka also finished the season with the most tackles, successful tackles out of any Premier League player this year as well.
That's a weird question, because, I mean, without any of them, like, going, like, Wan-Bissaka, Harry Maguire, and then, like, Bruno Fernandes, like, it's, like, I mean, I think that Wan-Bissaka and Harry Maguire were important for the team, because obviously it's two more players, and we really needed something on that back line. So it's really weird to say that we would have needed him more than Bruno, but, I mean, obviously we don't be that successful with either.
You know, I would actually say that they were all equally important, equal parts important, just because you're talking about three guys that all brought stability to their positions. Harry Maguire played 38 games this season. Yeah. Bruno pretty much played every single game the moment he joined Manchester United. Wan-Bissaka did not miss a lot of time. So you just knew that you were writing a permanent marker on your team sheet in those three positions for the whole, you know, for however long that they've been with the club now, whether it be the full season or the half season. So I'd say that they're all equal parts important, because going into the summer last year, we had questions at right back, we had questions at center back, and we had huge questions at midfield. And we've at least answered those questions now. And now all of a sudden, we're not looking for our out-and-out starter. We're looking for guys to provide depth in those areas now, which is a vast improvement.
In terms of qualifying for the Champions League, they are all three equally as important to each other. But make no mistake about it, you do not get Bruno Fernandes if they don't already have Maguire and Wan-Bissaka. Because what it was, let's build the team. And Solskjaer said, we're gonna fix the back first. You know, I have a lot to work with here. I have a lot to do here. I'm going to fix the back first. And I wrote about this at the beginning of the season, was, yes, he let Lukaku go, and he let Alexis go, and he let all these other talent go. But the goal was, take those 1-1 draws and those 2-2 wins, and instead of trying to turn them into 2-1 wins and 3-2 wins, he's trying to turn them into 1-0s and 2-1 wins. Because it's easier to keep the ball out of your own net than it is to put it in your opponent's net. And United did that. They frankly did that at the beginning of the season, but there was just always one thing going wrong. Like Ruben Neves hits one from outside the box, a Victor Lindelof own goal, just weird, a De Gea mistake, weird fluky things, and they weren't scoring enough to do it. But what he did was he put the entire team in place that basically said all that's missing now is a number 10, and you give us somebody competent at this number 10 position, you watch and the rest of the team's just going to take off. And that's exactly what happened. So he said, we're going to do the defense first. You know, instead of saying we're going to try to do this all at once and probably fail, which is, kind of what Van Gaal tried to do, or probably kind of what Mourinho tried to do. Van Gaal also did the same thing. He kind of said, let's do the defense first, then we're going to move to the midfield. And allegedly, the last thing he said was, then we'll get to the attacking part. Like, we don't know because he didn't make it to year three because it was so dreadful. But Solskjaer said, defense first, built the entire team, and then said, now all we need is the keys to the – like, he built the engine. Now he just needed the keys.
Yeah. And I think what's more important, not just the talent that came in, but you look at the players that these three replaced. Aaron Wan-Bissaka replacing Ashley Young, who not only is not a natural right back, but he's also error prone. And Antonio Valencia, who is also very much past it. Harry Maguire replacing Phil Jones, who's not only error prone, but is, not someone who can stay healthy.
Man, and people discount that all the time, dude. The fact that he even got rid of him in the first place.
And I mean, Chris Smalling, I think most people would say, is a better defender, and he's had a pretty good year at Roma. But also,
but that's
makes
all
it
he
a
is.
Bit easier
he's
to
a
forget.
Defender. But all he is a defender. He defends and gives the ball right back to the other team, so he's ready to defend again. And that's part of what Solskjaer wanted to do. Everybody gets annoyed that we keep playing out the back, but the purpose is we could defend and clear the ball and give it back to the other team and be ready to defend again, or we can defend and hold on to the ball, and then we don't have to defend again.
Exactly. And the fact that, Harry Maguire is error prone at times, but he, one, stays healthy, two, he is an enormous presence defending in the area, especially against aerial balls. And I don't have all the stats in front of me right now, but the 18-19 season, it seemed like we were the Chelsea of this season when it came to set pieces and corner kicks.
We were very similar this season, too. If you think about it, in the first half of the season, when everything's going wrong, it was a lot, it was a lot of set pieces. Set pieces against Burnley, Watford, City. That one didn't end up hurting us, but, the Lindelof own goal against Everton was a corner kick. Off the top, trying to think of some others off the top of my head. Set pieces, just West Ham put one in. That was a straight shot. I said Watford, but Liverpool in the game at Anfield was a set piece. We were bleeding goals on them.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Matt?
Huh? I was just agreeing. I was just said,
So,
Maguire brought a lot to the defense, but there's still work to be done, and that's fine. It's a work in progress. You can't expect everything to happen overnight. Although dropping from 50 something goals conceded to 36, the third fewest in the league, in a season where off the top of your head you can name a bunch of errors that the goalkeeper made that put the ball in the net. Yeah. That is not bad in any way, shape, or form. If De Gea cuts his errors down in half, we concede probably fewer than 30 goals.
Yeah. And also that stretch at the early part of the season where we weren't scoring a lot probably takes a big chunk out of potential goals scored for us, because we only had 66. I think that's around what we had last season too. But I don't think anyone would say that our offense last year was as good as our offense this year, especially, down the stretch finishing the season, which, by the way, last year down the stretch, when we got tired, we started losing as well as drawing games. Whereas this year, in a very crowded COVID schedule, we were able to keep our unbeaten record in the Premier League.
We found a way, man.
I mean, yeah, I tweeted that last week. What happened when we only had one of Rashford, Martial, Bruno, or Pogba available for selection. We played 7 games. We scored 4 goals. 2 of them were penalties. It turns out that relying on Pereira and Fred and McTominay and James and Mata and Lingard to actually carry the team rather than being parts in the team, not a good strategy. Can't do that at the Premier League level. And suddenly, you know, as soon as we got some comp, we played 19 games, which is half the season, with 2 of those 3 guys, just Rashford and Martial or Martial and Bruno. We won 10 games. At the beginning of the season, when everybody was like, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing, it's like, no, he just had shitty players, which the smart people were able to be like, if you can't tell, Andreas Pereira kind of sucks. Like, Juan Mata's not a winger. Daniel James is 5 games removed from the championship. You can't rely on him to carry a Premier League team.
Hell no.
And then at the end of the season, we when you say, like, it's a crowded COVID schedule, we were tired, we were fading. We picked up 14 points in our last 6 games, which is the most we've ever gotten since 2008-2009.
When we won the Premier League.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nathan, I know Daniel James is your boy, and you wrote a piece on him last summer. What would you say about him in terms of living up to your expectations this season, or whatever those expectations were?
God, it's just like... just over a year that I wrote that piece.
It's crazy.
What's it been?
He hasn't written anything since.
God damn it, Polly. Don't take the joke out of my mouth. I promise I'm actually going to write something pretty soon. I wrote the Chippy this past week, by the way.
You wrote the last 2 podcast publications. So.
Yeah.
We'll give you the 3rd place trophy for that.
Yes, Daniel James is the question that you asked me before we got sidetracked there.
He's the Welsh winger that we signed last summer.
Yes. So, Daniel James has moxie. I like him. That's my guy. My son. My little boy, Daniel. Danny boy. He did not look good.
Your ability to avoid answering this right now is...
Yeah, dude. Daniel James started off hot.
This is a difficult question, and you're like just talking around in circles to avoid answering.
Like a Talladega Nights bit. You're a 6-pound,
8-ounce. On both sides. Look, there's good people. Daniel James, right side, left side. There's good people on both sides.
Yeah, there's good plays on both sides from Daniel James. that really hits close to home, considering I live like 45 minutes away from where that happened. Anyway, so Daniel James' first half of his season. He looked pretty good. It was one of those ones where you're like, oh, wow, we might have found ourselves a diamond in the rough, you know?
Yeah, he was like our only player that could score at first.
Yeah, he clearly had some deficiencies in his game, but he had a lot of positives. And you're like, all right, we can fix some of these things. And it's the old adage, you can't teach speed. So you could teach him how to be a more technical player, and he's already got the wheels to add to it. But clearly, pre-COVID – we ran him into the ground, and he also was starting to get figured out by defenses pretty quickly too. So it's just you just saw his progression. It was just on a steady trajectory down. And what's unfortunate is he really looked poor after the reset. He was a nightmare when it came to possession. He could play the occasional cross that looked all right, but you know his finishing wasn't there, and just. Frankly, he was a liability on the ball in the final third, and there was a lot of times where United had build-up play just completely ended because he just could not get past his defender. These are all things I think he can work on, but it certainly, you know, from last year when I was very hopeful that maybe we found ourselves or, you know, we sniped some player out of the championship a la like Liverpool has done with the likes of Andy Robertson. I was hoping that would be the best case scenario. Right now, if you were to ask me, I'd say that Daniel James probably looks more like he'll be a fine squad player for us that, you know, gets minutes off the bench. I think he's still very valuable as a 75th minute sub where if you're playing against a tired defense, he's going to run somebody ragged.
$15 million, that's not bad at all.
Yeah. No, I think there's still a lot of potential for him, and there's a lot of time for him to learn. I mean, he was in his first year. There was a lot of turmoil in his first year.
His dad died. Like,
yeah, he had a terrible start.
Yeah, a lot of people forget that, and he literally scored the next match. I think it was the day after.
Yeah, it was his home debut, Old Trafford.
No, yeah, his father passed away in June. Yeah. His father passed away in June. It was just
right
his
before
first
he signed, I think.
Yeah. His signing was delayed by a week because of his father.
So I think if you just let him have some time, he's not going to be in the spotlight now because either way, you're going to have Greenwood and hopefully you're going to have Jadon Sancho ahead of him. So now he can, you know, get some TLC in practice, really start to refine some portions of his game, which I mean, frankly, we don't know that he would have had that kind of attention focused on him at Swansea. They might have just relied on him for just raw talent. So I think there's still a great opportunity for him to grow as a player. And if it doesn't, then, you know, we cut our losses on a player that wasn't overly expensive. So I think there's no reason to hate Daniel James because I do see some things on Twitter where it's like, this seems excessive, guys. Like, he's not gonna be a world class player. I think we can all see that, but I think there's still something there.
I think he actually was starting to come around a bit before the lockdown. Like in January, he had hit a wall, and that was obvious. And we kind of rested him a bit more in February, but I think like he played well in that City game. Then he went and scored against LASK, and I thought he was starting to turn a corner again. Maybe hit a second wind. You know, that his celebration when he scored against LASK was much less of a celebration and much more the look of a man relieved who was like, I needed that goal. And that's all of his teammates came right up to him. And that was basically the vibe that it gave off was, we're very happy because you needed that. But then, like Nathan said, he gets the COVID break, which should have been great for him. But like Nathan said, he came out of it and just didn't look any better at all.
Flat.
And that was really disappointing. I mean, even against Chelsea, he hadn't played in ages, and against Chelsea, he looked tired. Like, and I was like, you haven't played in like 3 weeks. Like, what is this? But yeah, 21 years old, right out of the Championship. Like, we knew we were signing a raw player. Like, that was going to develop. That we weren't going to see anywhere close to his best for at least 2 or 3 years. That this year, you know, was about development and whatnot. 4 goals, 7 assists. Like, if I would have told you that at the beginning of the season, you would have signed on the dotted line for that. It just happens that 3 of those goals came in the first 3 games, or first 4 games. The assists, everything was very front loaded. But if I would have said that we're going to sign a guy for $15 million from the Championship, he's going to get 4 goals, 7 assists in all competitions in his first season, which, by the way, it's not done because I would assume he's going to play in the Europa League. We would all sign on the dotted line, and, you know, he is still this raw player that is still developing. Will he ever, you know, he's not going to develop into Jadon Sancho, like Nathan said, but he's a very useful player. And don't forget, when he showed up to preseason last year in Australia, the United players were raving about him. So it's not like he just walked into camp and the players were like, oh, right, new player. And he got off to a hot start by scoring 3 goals and then just faded. And it was like, yep, all right, flash in the pan. Like, all the players were raving about this guy in preseason. There is clearly talent there. He tore up preseason. Granted, it's preseason, but there is clearly talent there. And it's just about cultivating it, being smarter, like understanding the game a bit more, having a year now.
Yeah, football intelligence.
He's got a year of experience in the Premier League with the physicality of it, and he just needs to work on developing that final ball and just putting it all together, which, again, 21 years old, so now he's 22. Like, that'll come.
Yeah, and there's going to be a little bit more of an adjustment period because, for all the reasons that we've mentioned, he went from Swansea City to Manchester United. So there is just, like, an infinite just – increase in pressure that he has to deal with. And, I commend Daniel James a lot because he was open about he struggles with you know, some mental health things. And he was a big advocate for mental health awareness over the season. Of course, he's already dealing with the death of his father, which I can't imagine having to deal with that ever, let alone when you're 21 years old.
And in the middle of your first Premier League season.
Yeah.
About to make the move to Manchester United.
Yeah, for all accounts, it was like he had a very, very close relationship with his father, and it's obviously been very affecting for him. And then just on top of that, like you'll see it every week. If he had a bad performance, Twitter, the cesspool that it is, would pile on him. And so I think he probably had a little bit of a, you know, for you, Colin, a Kevin Love situation where I'm sure he started to feel a little bit of it. And, you know, yeah. I think we all have our own struggles. And if you start to get down in the dumps and you get piled on, it's really hard to get out of that. So from a mental thing, he's going to continue to be able to improve that in his game. And then, like I said, I think the technical parts of it can be adjusted too. So
he got a really bad draw. Like, remember how this team set up against Chelsea on day one of the season and how it was basically built was Pogba's in the middle of the field and he's just going to spray passes around to everybody. Rashford and Martial are going to take on the goal scoring. Lingard on the right wing played very well there last year when Solskjaer took over and did a lot of the dirty work to open up space for Rashford and Martial. So at the start of the season, you know, you expected something out of Lingard. 4-goal, 3-assist player. Like, I would, that's not saying that would not be setting expectations too high for Jesse Lingard. He gave you nothing. And within a few games, all of a sudden, Pogba's out, Martial's out. So now, yeah, Dan James got off to a quick start, but now it's Rashford and Dan James are having to carry the team when he was supposed to just be this 21-year-old that's breaking into the team slowly and providing you a little bit extra. And then Martial comes back, but at this point now you realize our midfield can't get the ball from defense to attack, so we have to use the counterattack, and we're still relying on him to carry the team. And then Rashford goes down, and now it's Martial and Dan James. And by the time Pogba gets back, and it's like, wow, you have a player here, a player there, and if you try to stop one guy, somebody else can beat you. By that time, you know, he's now on the bench, but the overwhelming bulk of his playing time this season has been as either the second or third option, which was never supposed to happen. Like what Nathan said earlier, is he's really going to benefit next year when hopefully there's a Jadon Sancho available. But like if there's a Pogba and a Bruno Fernandes and a Rashford and a Martial, when there's so many other players that could beat you and teams can't be devoted to, you know, they can't devote extra players to stopping Daniel James, which is what they originally did. They said, you know, if we put 1.5 guys on Daniel James, we'll take him out of the game. But now if you do that, somebody else will beat you.
Yeah. And what I was going to say about Daniel James is one thing that he really brings you is his versatility on the, you know, attacking front. Because like we said, he gives you the assist when he's playing on the right wing. He can get you goals when he's playing on the left wing. He's played forward a couple times, including, I think, in the Manchester Derby, where he had a chance through on goal when Bruno sent him.
He did it against Chelsea, too, in the FA Cup. He did it. He started as, like, the lone number 9 against Alkmaar in that awful 0-0 away draw that everybody has,
Let's please not talk about that game ever.
Right. Yeah. Everybody immediately... Well, no, they didn't immediately do it. At first, like 0-0 away from home with a rotated squad in Europe is a decent result, especially in the second group stage match. That's a fine result, but up until November, it was being held against Ali. Since November, apparently, they have all agreed to just forget that it happened. But Daniel James did start as the number 9 in that game.
Yeah, but yeah, he gives you that, and when you look for role players, especially in the transfer market, you know, that's what you want to see, is somebody who can play a few positions. So segueing to the next topic in this part one, the transfer window coming up. Matt, you and I last year did an episode where we went through the entire squad and picked, you know, keep, sell, you know, role player who's probably starter talent.
Do you still have that list? And
I do somewhere.
Dude, you can just send it to me when you find it. I'd love to read that.
But going into this transfer market now, we still have a little bit of dead weight and we still have needs in the starting 11, what is one position that you would want to see addressed, that, you know, other than Jadon Sancho?
Okay, good, because that's the first thing I was going to say was, all right, I don't think we need to talk about Jadon Sancho because we all want him and we all, like, everybody's on board. I mean, it's weird because it really just depends on the day. Tomorrow I'll wake up and be like, oh man, I think we need a center back. But right now I'm like, well, I still think we need some midfielders in case like Bruno or Pogba go down. So, I mean, it really depends on like what anyone wants to talk about more at what point in time, because I feel like we need, and I mean, don't get me wrong, a CDM could be helpful since we spent a lot of time, the last time we recorded, about how we don't think McTominay is going to really be like a Matic type player. I mean, I still don't know. We still don't know. Just like we don't know about, you know, like how good Daniel James will be one day. You know, we don't know these things.
Yeah, one of those players has 3 years more experience, though.
Yeah. Oh, no, no. It was just an example. But
bad one.
But, okay. Well, all right, go ahead. You guys talk, man. I lost my train of thought. Thanks.
I think, personally, I'm more inclined, if we're going to prioritize between, you know, midfield or center half, I'm going midfield. I think our defensive situation is still that, if we leak goals, we need to still be able to string plays up front, and I think the midfield's going to help out with that a lot more. And I'm inclined to say that we need to have somebody who either is going to start ahead of Matic, and then Matic comes in relief, or somebody who, you know, we're doing half and half, where you can expect this person to start on this day, and then you can expect Matic to start on the next day, and you're not going to lose, you're not going to have anything lost in translation, whether it be who's going to be Matic's heir apparent or whatever. We've made that allusion to pitchers and pitch counts, starting pitchers and coming out of the bullpen, all that kind of American sports jargon that half of our listenership probably just despises. But yes, I think that's what we need, is more midfield. Some of the names that we always get thrown around, you know, I'll tee up Pauly with Dennis Zakaria or from Borussia Mönchengladbach, or you've got Thomas Partey from Atletico Madrid, who certainly showed off against Liverpool in the Champions League that he is a pretty solid midfielder. If you really want to get expensive, you got Sergei Milinkovic-Savic out in Lazio, who would be a very, very tasty prospect in our midfield. I mean, certainly those would be three guys I'd love to see if you're looking for names, too.
Yeah. I mean, if you add – Colin, you asked starting 11, but if you add Jadon Sancho into the starting 11, then on their day, this starting 11 can compete with anybody. They don't need to spend money on someone new there. What they need is to spend money on someone, because if you are a Bruno Fernandes or a Paul Pogba away from being terrible, and with that, you don't need you don't need backups there. You need starter level talent to be a backup. And as you saw also, we are a Luke Shaw going down away from the entire machine just not working all of a sudden. You know, that was why we struggled against West Ham. It's why we struggled against Leicester, because when we couldn't progress the ball through the left side because we didn't have a left-footed left back. Like, say what you want about Luke Shaw, but he is a cog in the machine and a perfectly adequate cog. And when you need to take that cog out, you need to replace it with the same level of adequateness. Like, you don't need to upgrade that part of the machine. You just need to have spare parts for it. And there's so much talk right now about a center back, and I just don't understand it at all. So many people, oh, we need a pacey center back. Why? When have we been? I understand Maguire and Lindelof aren't the fastest two players out there, but when have we been beaten for pace to concede a goal this year? Again, third best defense in the league, considered the third fewest chances, the third fewest goals. Expected goals had us at about third or fourth, and that's with De Gea making error after error after error.
That's also because the back line didn't help him out at the end of the season. But also, I mean, fine, we might not need a pacey center back now, but we're going to need one when we play these teams from Spain, these teams from Italy. Like, I still think we need, like, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I think we need a center back and a midfielder and Jadon Sancho, but okay, so I still think we need a fast center back.
Name me a center back that's available.
Nathan Ake just got relegated.
Yeah.
I would sign Nathan Ake too, but then, you know,
we need more Nathans. I've always been very upfront about that.
And then everybody has a problem. Oh, well, we're signing a player from Bournemouth. Nathan Ake would be a great signing, but he is not an expensive one either. So, like, there are people that are saying go out there and spend tons of money on a premier center back.
Well,
that's not what we need.
Those are people who want Koulibaly without realizing that he's 30 years old now.
Right.
I would bring in Jan Vertonghen call up Jan Vertonghen and I would say, these are the wages that we will offer you. This is the role. You will be able to play in the Premier League still. You'll be able to play in the Champions League because he is still good enough to play, especially in those group stages where you're not playing Juventus every week. You know, you play Juventus twice, but you also play Red Bull Salzburg or Red Star Belgrade. So he's good enough to play in that, and that'll help, you know, ease the burden on Maguire and Lindelof. And I would call him up and say, these are the wages that we're offering you. This is the role. If he accepts it, great. If he says, no, I want something better, then you go, okay, well, we're not going to fight for you. But I would at least call him up and offer it.
Absolute worst case scenario, we've got Chris Smalling returning on loan.
Again, that he doesn't fit.
Is he actually returning?
No,
I mean,
and he doesn't fit the team at all because
they
can't
like want him.
He's someone who can actually like turn a profit for us. Like if players that we want to sell, he's somebody who could actually bring in a transfer.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said absolute, as in the worst case scenario.
Yeah. No,
we have like, Smalling.
So,
he would be below Diogo Dalot on the pecking order. Like, Solskjaer does not
put
want
Matic at center back.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right. I would put McTominay at center back first.
Jesus.
You're giving me West Ham flashbacks.
Right. I know. Well, the other reason to say, like, there's no reason to spend a lot of money on a center back is because, again, you just, like I just said,
I think we should spend a lot of money. I agree with you on that. I just think we should get one.
Is it the priority? It cannot be the priority. The priority has to be Jadon Sancho, and then the priority after that has to be getting someone that if Pogba or Fernandez goes down, is a capable backup. And then the other priority has to be somebody in there for Matic, because like Nathan said, you know, you can't rely on Matic day in, day out. I think Fred could do that role, but Solskjaer hasn't given Fred a legitimate chance there next to Paul Pogba at all this season. He's played him in that midfield role next to McTominay, which has done
made me nervous that Fred didn't play that much.
And McTominay, and he was terrible. And Fred kept, and every time Fred got on the field, he was fine.
We also only got Fred to say fuck you to City, but
he's been all right. He can absolutely play that role. But you want somebody, there's this other thing that, you need a backup left back for the reasons that I said before. But when Shaw was out, we saw it against Crystal Palace. We very much saw it against Leicester. Those teams just they condensed the middle of the field. They slammed in the middle to muck it all up. But they also, whenever United had the ball, there was always one player on top of Bruno and one player cognizant of where Bruno was and one player on top of Paul Pogba and one player cognizant of where Paul Pogba was. And when either of those guys got the ball, there were three guys that collapsed onto them. But when Matic had the ball, they didn't even break their shape. They just said, you want to carry the ball up to the edge of the box? By all means, go ahead and do so. And if that's going to happen, then you need a player that can, because remember, like when you play Pogba next to McTominay, Pogba ends up being the more defensive of the two. So if you can go out and get a player that can shoot from the edge of the box or something, or if, you know,
because we saw them do that. And
that when you say, hey, you can just walk up the field to the edge of the box, we don't care. We need a player that can make them pay for that. And whether that's Jack Grealish and dropping Bruno Fernandes back into the eight role, or Jack Grealish dropping back into the eight role, or Dennis Zakaria, or just somebody else that is a defensive-minded midfielder that can play that Matic role, but has just a little bit of offense to his game that will make
Van de Beek. Van de Beek.
By the way, Matt, I found the list. I'm going to go through it real quick, but one of the names, because yes, we have a transfer list section on it, and on our needs, we have listed center back, right back, left back, center defensive midfielder / central midfielder, right winger, and striker. Top of our transfer list was Harry Maguire, got him. Then
wow, we had Gareth, a lot of those, though.
Yeah. Milan Škriniar, I think. Yeah, he's still at Inter. Is maybe an option going forward, but I doubt he's going to leave under Conte. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, got him. And then Pauly, this one you may not agree with, but a defensive-minded midfielder who can let loose from the top of the area, Ruben Neves.
Nah, Midland's Fred. Go F himself.
And then below that, we have Christian Eriksen, who is no longer an option, and Joao Felix, who went to Atletico Madrid. But these are the categories that we came up with, Matt. So the first category was keep. This means that the player is good enough to stay because they are a first-team player. And in that category, we had David De Gea, Victor Lindelof, Paul Pogba, Marcus Rashford, Anthony Martial, Luke Shaw, and Ander Herrera.
I'm just sad all over again, dude.
Yeah, but at least we're not paying.
Ander Herrera, we'd be golden right now.
At least we're
dude.
Not paying him oh, 100, or, what is it, $350,000 a week,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, he wanted a lot of cash.
This team is far better off having let Ander Herrera leave.
Yeah, well, yeah, we're able to pay other people's wages now, including maybe Paul Pogba, hopefully.
But we paid like 500 or 400 for Alexis Sanchez. Like, oh, that drives me insane. Anyways, sorry, go ahead, Colin.
Yeah. Next category is rotate, which means that they can stay in a squad role, but they are not a first choice player. This is probably our biggest category. Eric Bailly, Juan Mata, Chris Smalling, Jesse Lingard, Andreas Pereira, who I would not keep in this category anymore.
Hell no.
Fred. Diogo Dalot, who I also would not keep in this category anymore.
Hell no.
Sergio Romero and Scott McTominay. Then we have a youth category. That's Pereira, Tuanzebe, Mason Greenwood, Chong, Angel Gomez, and James Garner. And Timothy Fosu-Mensah, who I'm not sure qualifies as youth anymore. And then we've got Cell, which means that they definitely need to leave. That's Phil Jones, Alexis Sanchez, Romelu Lukaku, Marcus Rojo, Antonio Valencia, Nemanja Matic, and Matteo Darmian.
Let me tell you, though, Timothy Fosu-Mensah.
Dude, we hit that on the head, dog. We hit that shit on the head. It feels so good, man.
In the span of 2.5 weeks, Timothy Fosu-Mensah got himself another year of United.
Yeah.
I'm like, earned it.
Just to see what happens. Yeah. Our next category is called Lee Grant. And Lee Grant is in that category.
That's right.
Yeah, best job in the world, man. Gets to go to every Manchester United game, just earns £30,000 a week, gets to train with David De Gea and Sergio Romero.
Sign me up, my guy. Sign me up.
And then our last category is we will pay another club to take him, and that is Ashley Young. This was, although this, the document is dated May 7th, 2019, which is fresh off that Barcelona loss. So that's probably why I was very emotionally invested in getting Ashley Young out of there.
I want to say we did that like the day after.
Yeah, it was something like that.
Yeah, I remember it being really fresh. We were mad, but yeah, right. Dude, I think we hit it on the head. I think it's good that we got a lot of these guys quote unquote out, but now we need to get them off of loans and get them permanent deals away from the club. Because to be honest, I think that
okay,
we get Sancho.
Explain how are you going to do that?
Oh, is Sanchez?
Okay. So, I mean, Inter might. I mean, they want Sanchez. Like, I just think that I don't think we get all of them done. Like, I think we still have like a lingering Marcus Rojo deal that will make us all mad. But like, I think getting those guys out, if it's possible.
Okay, but how is it possible? How will you get them out?
What, I don't understand the question.
Like, how are you going to get rid of
Talk
Sanchez?
To him and...
How are you going to get, like, I'm sure...
Because Inter want Sanchez, and they want to possibly give us Perisic for him. I don't understand. What do you mean? What do you mean? How do we get rid of him? Like, they already want some of these guys.
But they want him, but that doesn't mean they can afford him. He's making $350,000 a week, and Inter want him, but they're not going to pay him that much, which means he's going to say, I am not taking that deal.
No, he's going to understand that he has to take a different role. He wants that move.
He wants the move, but he doesn't want to give up the money.
Okay, this is regardless. I'm not trying to talk about this. I'm trying to talk about this. Totally something else. So basically, like, what I'm trying to say is how the deals get done, I don't want to go into the intricacies of that, okay? Like, I'm just saying what I want to happen. What I want to happen is for these guys to leave, okay? I don't know if it'll happen, Polly. I don't know if it will. I want it to, okay? But if we get these guys out, I think it makes it easier for another signing. So, like, I don't think we get Grealish anymore, like, with the whole Villa thing. That's a whole nother conversation, but I think that selling the rest of these guys is important, and then we could possibly get like an Ake and maybe somebody else. I don't know who they're looking at. You know, I don't really care. I just want to refortify the team. Like,
yeah. And I think with the amount that we took out of loans, it was a couple months ago that story broke, was about £150 million or something like that, which is what everyone seems to be reporting is our budget for this summer. If we are able to move some players, that would definitely free us up in wages. I'm not so sure that we would bring back much, maybe to add to that in terms of, you know, what we can pay in transfer fees for other players, though. But definitely freeing up the wages is going to be big.
$150 million goes a lot farther than you think it does.
Yeah, especially with the COVID market, supposedly.
And not only that, but just remember, like, $80 million for Jadon Sancho or $100 million for Jadon Sancho is not $100 million this summer. Like, the Maguire deal was $80 million up front, and that was a rarity. Most of these deals are paid out over time, so $150 million goes further than you think it does. I do think, I think Aston Villa are balking now at the Jack Grealish thing. But Grealish is gonna take it upon himself to force a move through, because I mean, yeah, Villa could do a Wilfred Zaha and just be like, we're not selling him.
Which we also get part of that transfer fee, for people that don't know that. We get a quarter of that transfer fee. So we want Zaha to move.
A quarter of nothing is nothing. And
that's still cash, dog. What you mean? A quarter of cash.
Zaha's not being sold, Matt.
Right.
Gonna happen.
You know, they can balk up and say we're not selling Grealish all you want, but then you end up with an unhappy player, and he is going to be more unhappy than Wilfred Zaha was. But yeah, I do think if Villa are going to hold out for $80 million, then be like, fine, we'll find someone else. But the key is you have to find somebody else. You cannot have a Fred, Diogo Dalot, Lee Grant transfer window here. I know it's COVID, but like there's still three players is a minimum. And, you know, a fourth would be nice. If Jan Vertonghen comes, he has to be the fourth, not the third.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do us for part one. And in part two, we are going to come back and answer a fan question. So stay tuned. And we are back for part two. So Polly has a fan question or email picked out for us. So take it away.
Yeah, this comes from Joel. Who sent it into the email. As I've always said, multiple ways of getting in touch with us. I think it's 617 Busby Bay or BusbyBabePodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for your email, Joel. Really appreciate it. He said, Dear Busby Babe, I have been enjoying your content as an ardent Man United fan. Anyways, here's my question. Who deserves to win Player of the Year for Man United? Also, is it time to drop David De Gea? This did come after the West Ham match.
Yeah, those are loaded questions. Marcus really is most loaded with the De Gea part.
Yeah.
We discussed the De Gea thing like I feel like two shows ago.
Yeah, we did a little bit. Let's do the Player of the Year part first then. Who wants to go first? Rashford. Or I guess Nathan did already. You want to elaborate on that? Marcus Rashford.
Let me reiterate Marcus Rashford. That's how I'm gonna do it. for all you ardent Man United fans, you guys understand why I'm choosing Marcus Rashford. Probably showed one of the highest increases in just development, you know, from last year to this year. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take all the off the field stuff into account too, for the importance of why he is our player of the year. I mean, I don't think you could ask for a better ambassador for Manchester United.
Dr. Rashford, man.
Or the city of Manchester. I mean, Marcus Rashford really took it upon himself over this COVID-19 thing, which has been a very, very difficult time for a lot of people, in a blue-collar city who are struggling. And he said, you know what? I got you. And he's been providing meals to children. He's just been, like I said, a great ambassador. And I just can't picture anybody else. I think for as great as Bruno's been all, you know, for his half a season, he wasn't here all year. I think the only other argument besides Rashford would be Martial, because once again, same, like, just marked improvement over last year to this year. It's been so impressive. And clearly, I mean, both of them being 20 goal scorers, they were clearly very important to our success. But I think I give it the, you know, Marcus Rashford being our Walter Payton Man of the Year, I think just adds that little extra sauce. So, and no, you don't drop David De Gea. I think he's still world class. Thank you, bud.
Matt?
I actually like the Rashford pick, but I gotta go with Aaron Wan-Bissaka, man. He played. Yeah. Yeah. I said this at the point in December, and he had a little bit of a shaky, like, January till now. But I mean, like, I'll say, like, for coming in and, like, having a starting role and doing all the things he did, I just think he played really well. I mean, he never super let us down. Like, he came in and pretty much did everything he needed to right off the bat, and he was pretty consistent. I mean, there's a few times where he, like, struggled, but I mean, I think that's due to fatigue. I'm not going to put that on that guy. But don't get me wrong, that's hard for me, because, like, Martial and Rashford are, like easy, like, they scored a bunch of goals this season, and it's awesome. But I don't know, like, him just being able to come in and do what he did, I think it's fantastic. And De Gea, I think it's stupid. I think it's just a lot of the same people that are ollie out, you know, in the middle of the season. So I think we just keep De Gea, and we just need a good reset. We just need rest. Like, if our backline had rest, like, Harry Maguire played almost the whole season. I think that's a big reason why De Gea has struggled, is because his back line has struggled. So I think he's great, though.
Yeah, and 129 tackles in the Premier League for Aaron Wan-Bissaka. The next closest was either Matic or Fred, I believe, and they were only at like 65. So that's pretty.
He's insane, man. Gap.
Yeah.
He's arguably the best right back in Europe right now. Like,
yeah, definitely lockdown defender worth £50 million. For the sake of difference, I think I'll go with Anthony Martial, even though Marcus Rashford is probably player of the year. And it's not just the 22 goals that he scored, but he has 11 assists in all competitions. And he had that stretch at the beginning of the year where he was unhealthy, or he picked up a hamstring injury, I think it was. But when he came back, there are still some inconsistent performances. But for the most part, he became a player that we thought that he could become the last couple of years under Mourinho, where instead of just being a really streaky player who would score for four games in a row and then disappear on the left wing, he started changing up his game a little bit, and he started getting involved and, you know, dropping back a little bit and getting involved in build up play. He didn't do that to the extent that Marcus Rashford did, but, and also I think the arrival of Bruno Fernandes probably helped him out in that regard a lot as well. But it's a lot of work that he put in to defeat this sort of lazy Anthony Martial agenda that he was facing. And I'd say he's maybe our most improved player from last year as well.
Yeah. For the sake of being different, those are two very good picks, but the answer is Marcus Rashford. This was a team that was planned on being built around Paul Pogba, and within four games he was hurt, and they had to rebuild it on the fly. And Rashford just took that on himself and literally carried this team. And Nathan mentioned Bruno Fernandes, an incredible 8 goals, 7 assists in however many games he played. Not a lot. He played about a third this season. But, you know, again, the same way that I said that we don't get Bruno Fernandes if it wasn't for signing Harry Maguire and Aaron Wan-Bissaka, we don't get Bruno Fernandes if it wasn't for what Marcus Rashford did. You know, if we were wallowing in I don't know where we were because the whole 5th through 12th were 3 points apart from each other at that point. But like, if we were, you know, we were about 4 or 5 points off of the top four when we brought in Bruno Fernandes. If we were down 9-10 points away, which we could have easily been had Marcus Rashford not carried this team in November and December, like, we're not spending that money on Bruno Fernandes. We just simply wouldn't. We'd probably be firing our manager, bringing in a new manager and saying, we'll, you know, the same way we did with Solskjaer last year. We'll evaluate this come summertime. So Rashford completely carried this team up until his back broke. And then when he came back, he, you know, yeah, he looked off of it for the first two-ish games and then settled in really well. And yeah, he wasn't the same Marcus Rashford because he was asked to play a different role. At the beginning of the season, he tended, like the rest of the team, to just disappear in games against teams that sat back. And after the lockdown, he was playing more of more of a playmaker type player, and there were more assists to his game. The goal started coming. And even when a team was sitting back and condensing and making life difficult, he had his say in the game, which is not something that we saw from him at the beginning of the season. So by all means, he managed, he showed that he added that level of depth to his game, and he still has room to grow, which is exciting because he's someone that'll put the work in, and he can be even better than this next year. But player of the season, easily Marcus Rashford.
Also, and I don't want to take any wind from any of our viewers who might be preparing the question, what was your goal of the season? But it was Rashford's free kick against Chelsea, without question. It was the best goal of the season.
Yeah. The way it, like, dips, too. And then, like,
it's pornographic.
Yeah.
It's actually not safe for work.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's better than Cristiano Ronaldo's against Portsmouth.
Safe for work because I watched it at work and I started screaming. Like, not yelling. It was screaming. And everyone looked at me like I was a crazy person, which I was because I was crazy for Marcus Rashford. He's wonderful.
I think this is a good idea. If Matt and Polly want to think of a goal of the season, I'm going to go with an unpopular pick, maybe, but it was probably the height of joy and definitely the feeling that I was chasing the rest of the season.
Daniel James' goal against Chelsea.
Marcus Rashford's third goal against Chelsea, the one where Pogba sent Marcus Rashford. But it was, Tony Martial had just made it 2-0, and Pogba wins it back in the United half and just sends Rashford through.
It was Lingard that won it back. Either Lingard or Pereira got a touch on that ball and, like, got it to Pogba, who, like, then just smashed it down the field.
It was all downhill from there.
But yeah, that was the feeling I was chasing all season.
I don't know if either of these are better than Rashford's goal against Chelsea. But two dark horses. One was Martial's chip against Watford.
Yeah.
And the other is Martial's first goal in the home derby against City.
Who wants to say McTominay?
Man, it was a really good goal, dude. I never get tired of watching it. Like, say what you want about McTominay.
Who had the better empty net goal?
Who had the better empty net goal? That shit was nutty. I did not expect that.
I'm sorry, but a goalie not being in the net, throwing the ball directly to a player, is an empty net goal. The same way. Who had the better empty net goal, McTominay or Jesse Lingard? Because Jesse Lingard.
Definitely McTominay, though.
Jesse Lingard also kicked the ball into an empty net. They were both empty net goals. Like, I'm sorry.
But McTominay's goal is way better.
McTominay's goal is 100% better, but, like, don't say, it wasn't an empty net goal. If the goalkeeper was remotely in his box.
I didn't say that. We didn't say it was an empty net goal.
It definitely sounded like Matt just said that.
No, I didn't say that at all.
Defend yourself, Matt.
I will, dude. I'm not taking this shit anymore.
I'm like everyone in the soccer, bro.
Fuck you, dog. I'll go with.
Also, how about
Chelsea?
Wait, Nathan, hold on. What were you saying, Matt?
I'll go with Rashford against Chelsea. It's great.
Oh yeah.
Shout out to Brandon Williams, though, that one goal he had. That one was kind of fun.
Yeah, kickstarted the comeback in against Sheffield United. By the way, the oral history of Sheffield
coming
United.
Coming soon. That and Burnley.
Anyone mentioning the Bruno goal against Brighton?
Oh, man.
Which one was that?
The countertop. Pass to Greenwood, and then just running down the other way and hitting them.
Yeah.
Cleanly.
That's a good one.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are at an hour now for recording, and I think all of us have engagements to be at pretty soon. But wrapping this up, thanks for listening. We've got more content coming, as does Manchester United. So we'll get back with Europa League preview stuff. We'll probably do that after LASK, to be honest. I'm not sure that game needs previewing. But we're also looking to maybe do another transfer podcast episode, similar to the one we were referencing earlier in this episode.
We got 69 days left, man. There's lots of transfer content.
Hopefully we can get to talk about it, and we're not just like talking about that it might happen. Yeah. Like, hopefully we can just talk about that some things happen.
Announce Sancho, you cowards.
I mean, Dortmund want the deal done by the 10th.
Yeah.
At least give us a kit release.
Yeah.
At least give me a grainy image of Sancho in the new kit like you did Wan-Bissaka last year. That's all I need.
Yeah. Playing the piano of Glory, Glory, Man, you know.
No, because Sancho's going to be wearing the 7. Don't add to it with more Sanchez shit.
Yeah, at least, like, give him a guitar or something.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he needs to be in, like I said,
in Eurovision style.
Do the video with Santan Dave, who just came back as an Ollie in guy after being Ollie out in January. He's back into the fold. Let's do it.
Yeah, where are all the leaders of the Poch Hive? Where are they now?
Yeah, at us. We predicted this.
Literally,
top
come
four,
at us.
Ollie in.
Come at us.
Do not clip by, a by single section
about
of me calling him a PE teacher. It was all satire. Don't you dare say that I said that seriously, even though I did.
Well, the last podcast episode we did, the ending of the recording, I didn't leave this in the episode, obviously, but Polly telling the Chelsea people, Colin is the worst at ending podcasts, so I'm ending this now. Thanks for listening.